Yeah, that's the song played at the inauguration ceremony of President of the United States and sometimes at public events. We don't know yet who it will be played for in the coming 4 years, but we will sometime after tomorrow, which is, of course, Election Day. Election Day falls on the first Tuesday in November, but many Americans are calling this election one of the most important, if not the most important, in recent history. Welcome to Kojo for Kids, the election show, where we'll aim to get a better understanding of this very messy thing called American democracy. Luckily, we found a good guide to help us figure out how Americans vote and how our government works. Irv Pyrum teaches government and history at the Columbia Heights Education Campus in D.C., which is also our school of the week. We'll be taking questions from students at that school, but we also want to hear your questions about voting, elections, and American government. Adults are welcome to listen, but on Kojo for Kids, it's kid callers only. Irv Pyrum, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, Kojo. Thank you for having me.
Irv, we'd like to get to the election in a minute, but first, let's learn a bit about you. Where were you born, and where did you grow up, and what did you like to do as a kid?
Actually, I was born in a rural city in Haiti called Pilote, and I came to Miami, Florida when I was 10 years of age. That's where I went to middle and high school and then went to Florida International University.
Wow. I've been to Haiti, but not to that place where you grew up.
It's a beautiful place.
Do you get back often?
Yeah, I was just there in January. Unfortunately, it was for my grandmother's funeral. But yes, I've been there.
Were you interested in government and politics when you were young? Were civics and government classes among your favorites?
History is really my passion. So that was my favorite class in middle school. I remember in primary school learning stories about Haitian revolutionaries like Toussaint and Dessalines. And that was my first interest in what intrigued me about history. And just so happens, government kind of go hand in hand with that history.
Gotta tell you, when I was growing up in Guyana, all we learned in that British colony at the time was British history until a history teacher introduced me to Toussaint Louverture, and that changed my perspective on life completely ever since. So I do understand what you're talking about. Tell us a little bit about the D.C. school where you work, the Columbia Heights Education Campus, and what classes do you teach there?
Absolutely. So the school I work at, it's the Columbia Heights Education Campus, CHECK. Like you said, it's in the Columbia Heights neighborhood. It's, I believe, the best school in the district. It's diverse. It's diverse in terms of staff as well as students. Our principal, Maria Tukeva, she, I believe, is the best in the district in terms of her empathy, passion for students. And she recruits and promotes that and her teachers, as well as the kind of education she fosters.
As a matter of fact, before the pandemic, we did our last Kojo in your community live in D.C. at that campus, the Columbia Heights Education Campus. But I'd like to hear from you, 800-433-8850. What are your questions about voting and elections? If you're a kid, you can call. Even though you may be too young to vote, are you politically active in other ways? 800-433-8850 is the number to call. Irv, let's talk about this election. All elections are important, but why are Americans and people around the world watching this one so closely?
So, as kids may not know, but you and I can remember, Kojo, pretty much every election you hear a sentiment that this is the most important election ever. I would say that this election does have a striking component in terms of the polar opposite nature of the two camps. So take it from the president to the Senate. They do have polar opposite philosophies, which are on the extreme end of polarization. So that makes it the most important election because the decision of voters will determine which side of the poll gets to make the decisions for the country for the next 2 to 4 years.
Well, 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton got nearly 3 million more votes than Donald Trump across the country, what's known as the popular vote. But Trump still won the election. Why is that?
That's just a product of the Electoral College system. So the way the Electoral College works, it's not really a college. What it does is assign a number of points to each state based on the fact that you have two senators and based on how many representatives you have, depending on your population. So it's a winner-take-all system for most states. So what can happen, let's say in a state like Virginia, that has 13 electoral college votes, if one candidate, let's say Trump and Biden, if they're mostly a tie, Virginia right now, I believe, has about 6 million eligible voters. But let's say there's a tie and one candidate wins that by just a handful of votes. What will happen is it's a winner-take-all system. The candidate who won by just a handful, they would get to carry those 13 electoral points. Conversely, in a state where one candidate may win pretty much all the voters there, they still can only get those electoral points. So the number of people that voted doesn't necessarily matter in terms of carrying those electoral points. It's just a winner-take-all system. So what would happened in 2016 is that Mrs. Clinton and the states that she won, like California, like New York, she really won big. But Mr. Trump won the Electoral College votes. He got to the 270 first, and that's what really matters.
Could this happen again, as it happened before, and has it happened before, where the person who gets the most vote does not get to be president?
Yes, that has happened before. In fact, that happened in the first election that I ever voted, the election of 2000, which was the election between George W. Bush and Al Gore. And yes, it can happen again because we have the Electoral College system. So the person who ends up losing the Electoral College could have really had more people vote for them because they won the votes really big in the places that they won. But again, what matters is that Electoral College count.
As a matter of fact, you voted in 2000 in Miami, which was the center of that controversy, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Hanging chads.
Hanging chads. Here now is 9-year-old Alexander in Virginia. Alexander, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, why was Election Day picked to be on November 3rd?
Irv?
That's actually a great question, Alexander. It goes back to the founding of the country, when they finished in the summer that they finished enacting the Constitution. They picked November because I believe it was more practical at that time. And the particular time also had to do with with buggies. So certain days weren't very practical because Wednesdays was when the day that they brought provisions to markets, and Sundays, people, that's the Sabbath when people went to church. So the buggies wouldn't be available for Monday.
Thank you very much for your call, Alexander. Irv, some people want to get rid of the Electoral College. Can the system be changed? And what would a presidential election look like without the Electoral College?
Well, can the system be changed? Absolutely. It would take Congress to change it, right? So it would have to go through the legislative process in the form of a constitutional amendment. In terms of what it would look like, is the person who wins all the votes, they would win. So it doesn't matter where they got the votes from in the country. It's whoever would win the majority, they would become the next president.
And what would it take to change that? What would it take to have that system in place?
Well, it would take 2/3 of the House, 2/3 of the Senate to pass an amendment and then ratify by the states.
800-433-8850. If you're a kid, give us a call. Do you know how voting and the Electoral College work? 800-433-8850. And 12-year-old Riley has a question that is really relevant to a lot of young people in D.C. Riley, you are on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. My question was, why do some people choose not to vote?
That's a great question, Riley. I think that some people are essentially making a conscious decision by when they don't vote because they don't feel the candidates suits their particular ideology. But most people do not vote because of something called political efficacy, which basically means they don't see the value in terms of government impacting their lives. So there's data on this that social scientists use that younger people tend to vote less than older people. And there's in terms of demographics data, in terms of how much money people make as well, which determines whether or not they're passionate about voting.
And I guess one of the fundamental questions is, how will voting affect my life? Here is 16-year-old George in Maryland. George, it's your turn. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. This election is, like, very controversial. Mm-hmm. And many people are being dramatic about it. And I was just wondering, like, will this election really impacts our lives greatly, or will it just, like, I know we're in a pandemic now, but other than that, will we be impacted whether President Donald Trump is elected or if Vice President Joe Biden is elected?
Irv?
Yes, that's a great question as well in terms of the ideology of those two camps in the actions, the decisions the government make. So will your life be impacted by their decisions? Sure. So if you were to go on the Republican platform and go on the Democratic platform, which one of these ideologies do you prefer? Will they impact your life directly with some of their decisions? Absolutely.
How would it impact his life?
Well, the decisions they make in terms of, for example, healthcare, the decision they make in terms of public policy, for example, their differences with COVID, what to do about it, which approach, will that impact your life one way or another, depending on which candidate you choose? Absolutely.
And I was about to ask you this question, but I think 10-year-old Sutton in Washington, D.C. beat me to it, so I'll go to Sutton first. Sutton, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
What's the difference between the Democrat and Republican Party?
The difference between them have changed over time, Sutton, but the short answer is ideology. What they believe in terms of what the role of government should be. So that's the clear difference. The Democrats believe the government should do more things in terms of things like social welfare. The Republicans tend to believe in things like less taxes, which they believe stimulate business. There are more contrasts that we can go over, but it really bows down to their philosophy on the role of government. Less government or a little bit more government when appropriate.
If you're a kid, give us a call, 800-433-8850. Are you following the presidential race? How about other political races this year? Are you following those? Give us a call, 800-433-8850. Irv, tomorrow's election is between two candidates, Democrat Joe Biden and Republican Donald Trump. How come, a kid would ask, it's always a Republican versus a Democrat? Aren't there other parties?
Absolutely. There are other parties. In fact, I just did early voting in Maryland on Friday, and there were other candidates other than Mr. Trump and Mr. Biden. So the other candidates belong to third parties, and political parties are really a private club. People choose to game. And it just so happens, since the Civil War, the Democratic Party and the Republican parties have had more membership, therefore more support, more resources, so they're able to promote their candidates more.
Yes, over the years, there have been other parties, the Progressive Party, the Green Party, and others. Here is 12-year-old Amaya in Virginia. Amaya, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Why was the Electoral College created?
The Electoral College was created because the founding fathers did not, or the founders, the framers, as some people refer to them, did not have a true belief in the wisdom of the average person. So what they wanted to do was to kind of put a barrier between the common person voting and the actual voting for the president. So when you vote, you're not voting for, let's say, Joe Biden or President Trump. You're voting for someone in your particular state who will cast the vote in mid, an elector who will cast the vote in mid-December for the president. Presumably, that person will choose whoever won in that particular state.
Thank you very much for your call, Amaya. Irv, even though young people can start voting when they turn 18, less than half of young voters went to the polls in the last presidential election. Why do younger voters so often sit elections out?
Part of it is buy-in, Kojo. Another part of it is older people tend to have more experience and tend to have more at stake in the game. So as for me, when I was 18, 19, 20 years old, I didn't really think much about, especially the kind of politics that impacts us the most, which is our local government. I didn't really think about it because I didn't pay property taxes and things of that sort. But as I got older and thought about how those things impacted me directly, I became more involved in politics. So what usually happens, there's usually a trend as you get older, you would become more involved in politics. And older people tend to vote at a much higher rate than younger people.
So what would you say to younger people who share that view? What would you say to them to motivate them to vote?
What I would say to them is that, well, elections do matter, and it does impact your life, from everything from college to tax rates to war. So you do want to think about the not voting is in a way making a decision on who the leaders of the country are. Because if you don't vote, and what it can do is allow someone you totally disagree with to get into office to make decisions that impact your life, like going to war.
Well, here is 7-year-old June with a question to test your historical knowledge. June, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. Hi, June. Hi, June. Are you there?
Oh, yeah. Can you hear me?
We can indeed.
Huh?
Yes, we hear you, June.
Oh, okay. Do I say my question?
Yes.
Okay. Who were the first candidates to debate each other?
Who were the first candidates to debate each other, Irv?
I know of a famous debate, the Lincoln-Douglas debate, but in terms of who was the first candidate, I don't know that fact, June. Can you tell me?
Wait, what? I can't really hear you because
Say that again, June.
I said I can't really hear you.
Oh, you can't say who were the first candidates to debate? Of course, the Kennedy-Nixon debates were the debates that essentially made debates famous. Isn't that right, Irv?
In terms of television, yes.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Thank you very much for your call. Here now is 12-year-old Brielle in Maryland. Brielle, it's your turn. You're on the air.
Hi, I was going to ask, what is socialism?
I think I let Irv feel that.
Sure, absolutely. Socialism is a government ideology, right? It's a belief in what the role of government should be. So an aspect of socialism could be more government support for things like public education, college, housing assistance. But socialism is also one of the aspects of it that people don't like is that you have to pay for those things, right? So it may come with higher taxes and things of that sort. But it's one philosophy about the role the government should play in our lives.
Exactly right. Here now is 9-year-old Naji in Washington, D.C. Naji, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi. My question is, do you think Black lives will be treated better with Biden if he gets chosen?
That's a great question. And the truth is, that's a hard question for me to answer. Mm-hmm. So, we would hope in terms when we compare the platforms of the two leaders, I think that those people who are in favor of Black Lives Matter tend to support the Biden and Harris camp more than they do the Trump administration.
Irv, though the national voting age is 18, some people think it should be younger. What's that about?
Well, the voting age is a product of the 26th Amendment, which what happened was people in kids protesting the war in Vietnam, calling out the hypocrisy of kids going to war and not being able to vote, got Congress to pass an amendment to make the national voting age of 18. So people who want to make the voting age 18, there's a rationale for it that kids 16 and up are reasonable enough in terms of responsible enough to make decisions with voting. I've heard counter arguments that kids would just be influenced by their parents, but there's arguments on both sides in terms of lowering the voting age to 18.
It certainly is. And Irv Pyram is a AP government and history teacher at Columbia Heights Educational Campus at DC Public School. Irv, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kojo.
Kojo for Kids, the election edition, was produced by Lauren Marco. And our conversation about celebrating Dia de los Muertos in the age of COVID was produced by Ineth Renike and Julie Deppenbrock. Coming up tomorrow on Election Day, we take a look at voter turnout and what's happening at the polls. Then we take a pause from election coverage to talk about how we can help neighbors struggling with food insecurity and other burdens during the pandemic as we approach the winter months and the holidays. That all starts tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you for listening and stay safe. I'm Kojo Namdi.
Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Julie Deppenbrock, Sydney Grannon, Kurt Gardner, Lauren Marco, Richard Cunningham, and Inez Renike. Our managing producer is Ingelisa Schroepsdorf. Our engineer is Mike Kidd. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.